People think, as a money educator, I'm there to sort out their finances. But in reality, my job is about having authentic and sometimes very raw conversations about life and the impact money has on our choices. I'm Vanessa Stoykov, and in this podcast, we're going to follow six people opening up very real conversations about their lives and money at their high school reunion. We'll then take key lessons from my first book, The Breakfast Club for 40-somethings, and dive into their behaviour and how it affects their life choices. I'll be talking about the five powerful pillars of behaviour with some leading CEOs and finance heavyweights to open up the conversations we all should be having about money. And we'll be looking at what financial freedom looks like to six very different people and how the choices they make gets them the life they deserve. So forget about spreadsheets and budgets. This podcast is a story about people we all know. They live in every city and town, and some of them are exactly like you. The decisions they make about money are life-changing, and we'll have front row seats to see what happens. Join us on their story and learn how to build your own pathway to the future you want with money conversations that can radically change your life. Now, let's get down to business. Last time, we looked at Jasper, a week-to-week good time guy with no real plan for his future.
Can you spot me at 50, Mum?
Yeah, I know I asked you last week. I'll pay you back when I make my next sale. Feel good about selling one this week. Thanks, Mum. I owe you one.
Jasper's trouble with focus showed us the importance of getting clear on what it is we really want. This episode, we're moving on to the third powerful pillar of finance. Belief. Most of us are unaware of how much our beliefs drive our behaviours. Whether it's memories from our childhood or even failed relationships, we are often driven by what we're used to doing, not what we could be doing. These patterns can help trap us into a bad relationship with money unless we take the time to learn about ourselves and question what really is holding us back. Let's get to know Jane and see how her beliefs are what's holding her back. A law graduate now working part-time as in-house counsel, Jane is recently divorced and is raising her two girls solo. She's smart, bubbly, and an expert at juggling tasks. But she's recently divorced from a volatile ex-husband. The girls live with her full-time, except for the occasional weekend with their dad. And with child support only covering the basics, Jane has a lot of work to do. After losing her house in the divorce, she's renting, but has no plan towards being able to buy again. Since she also took time off to have children, her super fund only holds $80,000. And being a mum means she's negotiated part-time hours to be there for her girls, which means a part-time income.
All right, girls, remember the plan today. I'm picking you up from after-school care at 6, then we're going to ballet, and then you're staying at Nan and Pop's tonight. No, you're not with Dad today. That's not till next weekend. All right, let's go, you two.
While she does receive some child support, it barely covers the twins' essentials. And her ex-husband, Nick, is unreliable when it comes to co-parenting. On top of that, his volatility means the less Jane has to do with him, the better. Jane still faces an uphill battle when it comes to getting on track financially, but she does have a lifeline. Her parents live nearby and often help out where they can. The extra hands help her stay afloat and give her a little breathing room when the busy schedule allows it.
Thanks for minding the kids on Saturday, Mum. No, I won't be late. We've got a rental inspection, so I've got to clean up. And I just ran into an old school friend at the shops and he invited me out for a drink. Oh. I don't know what he does for work, Mum. I haven't had a chance to catch up yet. But it'll be nice to have a bit of a break. He seems nice. Anyway, I'll be home by their bedtime and dinner will be in the fridge. Thanks a lot, Mum.
Jane knows that her income, costs and workload aren't adding up to much of a retirement plan. She's got to make a change, but she doesn't know how. In the aftermath of her divorce, she's resigned herself to renting, working part-time and keeping her head above water, assuming her parents would leave her their house. All with the emotional toll of a failed marriage behind her, Jane is lacking the belief she needs around improving her finances. She's about to learn a few things about our third powerful pillar of finance, belief. So I thought I'd call in one of my oldest friends in the finance industry, actually, Anique Donat, who is not only the CEO of Clime Investment Management, but she's also one of the most authentic and passionate people you'll meet in finance. And she runs a lot of businesses, including an advice network, and she's always done things for the right reasons. So I feel like Jane is the perfect character for Anique to join me and talk about. So thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for having me. It's funny that you picked Jane. God, I can relate to a lot of things that she went through.
She's got a pretty challenging situation in front of her, right? Single mother, two kids. She's educated. She's a lawyer, so she's got an income, but she has to work part-time, no partner to rely on, no one else to pay the bills, and she's had to sell a house in the divorce, and, you know, it looks like she may not be able to afford to get another one.
Yeah, look, it's funny. I grew up like that. Well, except three kids, not two. My mum was a single mum and didn't have anyone to rely on. And back in the day, child support was really difficult to get out of people. And I know Jane's facing the same thing. And it's really interesting to watch when a woman goes through such trauma. All of a sudden you retreat and you go, I've just got to get back to what I can control. And taking a risk is not an option. But what she's forgotten is by not taking that risk, she's created more pain, not intentionally, but she hasn't backed herself.
She's still working for someone else and taking the scraps because she has to work part-time.
And in her mind, her belief system is, I'm a mother, that's my first responsibility. And as that responsibility, I've got to be there for the kids and I can't rely on anyone because mothers are expected to be able to do it all. And they're supposed to be able to, you know, keep the house tidy, have a job if they're a professional, and raise children and do that all with a smile. Well, you and I are both mothers. How often do we do that, right?
That's great. And I think she's got 80 grand in super, so not insignificant, but certainly she'd want more. I talk a lot about needing $2 million in retirement and people go, what? How does that work? But when you break down what you'd actually live on per year, and we're not dying at 70 now.
And because we're living longer, I can guarantee you there's not going to be a pension.
It was like 8-1 of retired people versus workers, but our poor kids, my God, there's like 4 retired people for 2 workers or something.
So. And people aren't having as many children as they used to, right? So you've got less people that can actually support your income if you're stuck in the middle. And I think the pension is an important aspect of financial stability, but it doesn't give you the life you've imagined.
It's not the plan B it might have been 30 years ago.
Correct.
You know, when it was designed that you would die at 70.
Yeah. When you are living like that, it limits the ability to be out and be social and do things. You think about just living on a pension only and still paying rent, it actually stops you from being able to do the things that you need for your mental sanity, and that's socializing with friends or being connected to the world some other way because you're so worried about, well, how am I going to afford this? Putting away super or extra contributions, they don't even have to be huge. You know that, the power of compounding. But putting that away at age 40-something, starting in your 40s is great. If you could start in your 30s, that'd be even better. But at least if you start in your 40s, I mean, I'm in my mid-50s this year and thank God I'm married to a financial advisor.
But Jane doesn't have a partner to rely on. An ex-husband with a history of violence isn't exactly a great support. And when your life partner becomes a liability, this can have a profound effect on your beliefs about money and success. Let's talk a bit about domestic abuse and Jane. What I did understand is this feeling of shame from Jane. I come from a nice family. My parents are still together. This is what I expected, and it wasn't like that at all.
And I married the right guy, so why didn't it work out? I know you're aware of this, but I grew up in a family where there was domestic violence and that was tough. And I always thought my mum was incredibly brave because she made a decision to remove herself from it. And it doesn't even have to be domestic violence. It can be financial abuse. And there are plenty of partners in life who control the purse strings, especially if women don't work. And so the husband brings home all the money and they control the spending. It must have been really hard for Jane to leave because she had this perfect picture of her life and she had the two kids. And I always think back of when my mum left my dad. It was in the 70s. You didn't leave your husband in the 70s.
Yeah, of course.
I've had a very strong mum. I always think, wow, back then that was tough. Right now you just wouldn't accept it. But I think women also are in a position now where, well, women do work, right?
She did decide to leave so that her daughters would not see domestic violence in the house. And I find it so interesting now that this topic has been sort of open up with Me Too and even Grace Tame and what's been happening on sexual violence. You know, you and I are Gen Xers, where if the old guy slapped you on the butt at work when you're in your 20s, you kind of just accepted it, right? Because that's what they did.
Especially in
finance. I think back and I'm like, oh, wow, that wouldn't have gone down now. But it was the way of it, right? I'm really happy to see it blown open. But what I think is super interesting is this collective consciousness that this is one of the biggest issues we face in the household. What Jane's learnt is, I mean, she's better off without him because he was spending her money. She was earning and he's buying cars and things to look successful, which, you know, we've all seen that. She was married to someone like that, and so her money went to his passions too. In the aftermath of her divorce, it's an easy place for Jane to lose hope, but it's also a key moment for her to examine her beliefs, because even in this situation, Jane has many advantages. She's qualified, capable, and she's got earning potential as well as familial support. If she can change her beliefs about the future she's expecting, it's these things that will build the future she wants. Look, it's a common story. It seems like the women are the primary carers, and in a divorce, well, certainly a divorce like this, she doesn't want a husband around anywhere. You saying she didn't back herself, I mean, you're someone who's always backed yourself. So if that doesn't come naturally to her, how does she overcome that?
Well, it's really interesting. It's foundational. I don't know how you overcome it, but Jane doesn't believe in herself, probably because her parents didn't think she could make good enough decisions early on. So you back yourself because your dad said you can do anything you want and you can be anything you want. And my mum was the same. Her expectation was I can be anything I want to be. I just have to go for it and have to want it badly enough and do all the right things. Whereas Jane has two parents who have pretty much set expectations but haven't given her the support. And then when she got divorced, she had to then hunker down and go, all right, this is my responsibility. I've got to do this. And this is my lot in life. And I think all too often, women in particular, especially through divorce, resign themselves to the fact that they've gone through so much trauma that they forget the most important thing. And that's to put the oxygen mask on, to look after themselves. Because if they're okay, everyone else will be okay. And I don't know how you unlearn that belief, but it's really important because everything else changes from that.
Jane was lucky enough that her parents could help with the kids. A lot of us who haven't had parents where they live would have loved that. But she thought having the right husband and having a family and a house was the be-all and end-all, and she got everything she wanted. It just wasn't what she thought.
I come from a family that parents that didn't stay married, so you kind of have a different view on life. I mean, her parents are still married. They're still living in the family home. I mean, nothing's really changed. And so her belief system is about, well, you meet a partner, you get married, you have children, and you live in the same family home for the rest of your life. And you just put up with it. Now, that's not uncommon, not at all. But then when something goes really wrong, your entire frame of reference has now been shaken up and you're like, okay, what do I do now? I don't know how to do anything else. I was raised to do this. And I think there's got to be earlier interventions. And especially in women, you talk about getting good advice, but it's about getting that advice of looking after yourself. One of the beliefs I have, purely because I was raised by a single mum, is that I have to be financially stable on my own. So that's a blessing, but it's also a curse, because then if I have a little bit of a moment where that's taken away from me, I kind of get anxious and go, okay, well, can I look after myself? I can, obviously, but I've had moments in my life going, I need to not rely on anyone. So if we taught women along the way that it's okay to be financially stable on your own, then maybe we'd have different outcomes. I'm not saying they'd get the happy ending and they'd have the marriage and they'd be in the same house forever, but when things go wrong, they've got another path.
I learnt financially secure on my own because I figured out pretty quickly no man was going to give me what I wanted. Not growing up in Canada. If this is all the life I want, I'm going to have to go get it. I think you're either someone who's meant to be an entrepreneur or a risk taker. I've run my own business for such a long time now, 23 years. But I do think it is that element of faith too, of know your value. As we rejoin Jane, it's been a month since the reunion. Jane has had some ideas. Ideas about work that could involve full-time and launching a legal consultancy. With friendships renewed at her reunion, she's getting the right input and planning. She's also starting a new romance, and with it has come the belief that she can move on past the trauma of her first marriage. Jane still got one major belief in the way of her financial future, thinking that the only thing her parents can do is leave the house to her when they pass away. It's not an easy topic to bring up for either side. It means Jane and her parents having to face their mortality, and that's the kind of conversation people often put up until it's too late. Jane's got a lot of potential, you know. She's educated, she's got her parents there. We've looked a lot at the hard stuff she's gone through, and it's been tough, but she's one of the more hopeful characters in the book. She has got lots going for her. She's cute. I like that she still gets out there, you know, in her 40s and says, I still am hopeful about love, which I love about her. But she's also got her parents that are willing to help. Jane knows she needs financial advice, but there's a major roadblock. Her dad thinks that financial advisors are crooks. But there are some steps they can take together to make it work.
I know you don't trust them, Dad. You've told me a million times. But I trust this one. And I need you to trust him if you want me to figure something out for myself and for your grandkids. So, you're coming with me and you can ask all your questions. Just please try to behave, okay? Yeah, I think this is the one.
Thanks to some timely financial advice, Jane has a plan she can believe in. And surprisingly, so can her parents. They walked out of the consultation with a new plan to help Jane out. Her parents are happy to downsize, sell their house that's too big for them to manage, and move on to a smaller place with less upkeep. And they can also give some of the money to Jane as an early inheritance. Which means Jane gets something to put to her business. But it also means she can contribute to her super, making the compound interest work for her. The dad is hilarious because he's there kicking tires, but there has been a lot of issues around trust with financial planners, a lot of people not even knowing what it costs. So even when I was writing this book, I'm having to put things in about just so people get a sense of what that sort of advice is worth or how it should work.
As you've mentioned once before, financial planning is not about just telling you what to do with your money. It's about managing people's lives.
Mm.
I think Jane's got lots of possibilities. The fact that she's brave enough to seek advice, that immediately opens up opportunities. When you go ask for help, go and ask some questions, it gives you things to think about. What I think is particularly good is that her parents came along with her.
You know, the fact that she was able to have the conversation with her parents about this wealth transfer that's coming of baby boomers handing over wealth, the biggest wealth transfer in the world's history.
Correct.
$3.5 trillion here in Australia will be handed over in the next 12 years or so. You know, how are people going to do that? And a lot of the time I've even got like close friends whose parents just won't talk about money, won't talk about what they're going to inherit. They're going to get something. They've got a house in Sydney. No house in Sydney's worth less than $1 million now. And their parents don't want to talk about it.
It's not that they don't want to talk about the handing over. It's about the dying.
Yeah, right? That's it. It's but the dying and the money are closely related. I say warm hands, baby. Give with warm hands, which is what Jane's parents end up doing. They end up going and getting financial advice to see how they could sell the house and give her enough for a deposit. I mean, we're going to see more and more of that. You've got a whole financial planning network under you as one of the companies you run.
I'm also married to a financial planner. So
right, I forgot for a second.
So he sees a lot of that wealth transfer, and obviously we've experienced it ourselves. Unfortunately, both our parents passed away. I think mortality is a very difficult conversation to have. Most people don't want to broach the subject, especially when your parents get older. I mean, we're of an age where people are dying around us, and it's quite scary, and you don't want to broach the subject because, first of all, if you say it in such a way that it's all about the money, they're just going to think you're a hideous child. And second of all, thinking, gosh, my mum and dad aren't going to be here anymore, that's kind of scary. It's not the dying bit. It's everything that you're going to lose or miss out on after they die.
For parents looking at handing on to their kids, everyone wants their kids' lives to be easier than theirs, better than theirs, provided security, all the things you want for your children. But how can you do that in a way where you can see it before it's over?
There's a lot of grandparents paying for things like education, their grandkids' education. There are a lot of families where, you know, there's divorce. The parents are around helping. This is what life is like for many, probably half the population in some circumstances. You know, there are ways, there are options to help your children. Because as you said, we want our kids to be okay. We want our kids to have a better life than we had. We want to make sure that they're going to be financially safe and be happy and in great relationships. And so having this story was really valuable.
With the right advice and a solid strategy for her business, Jane has real potential to be the income provider for her family if she launches her legal consultancy. With that comes financial independence and the flexibility to be there for her family when she's needed. Jane has always had potential. She's always had the resources and the skills to build the future that she needs and that her kids need too. The difference is, she never had a path she could trust.
You've got this situation where she's backed herself because she's surrounded by predominantly female friends that decided to back themselves. I think your environment and who you spend time with and the people that you seek out to support you are incredibly important. Look at you and I. We've done over 2.5 decades doing different kinds of things, but if we've needed each other, we've literally picked up the phone and gone, let's go do this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a lot of fun. But isn't it interesting, the intervention came from a reunion, and often a reunion can be a blessing or a curse, and in this case it was a great catalyst for where they were going.
What a difference some financial advice makes. I think I was so embarrassed after my divorce I just couldn't see clearly. Finding that belief in myself has been such a turnaround. I now know I can start my own business, I can provide for my girls, and yeah, even be in a new relationship. Not to mention I see my parents in this whole new light. I knew they always had my back, but I'm so glad they trusted me to come and seek advice too. It was a difficult conversation, but wow, so important.
I think Jane's going to be okay with the help of her parents. She sort of has a happy ending.
We all know a Jane. We all do. And the fact that she made a different decision, a tough one, that if she didn't look after herself, she couldn't actually look after anyone else, was a really big call. You know, a problem shared is a problem halved. And all of a sudden you have this different opportunity because she's not just relying on her own ability to protect her family. She now has the support of her parents. So I think, and as you know, this has a really good happy ending.
Mm. Us just talking today about Jane and you know, someone like you coming in and giving your take on what's happening, I really appreciate it. I know people will value it. You're an inspirational woman, and any young women listening to this could have a look at your career and what you give to the community and be inspired. So thanks for coming on another crazy journey with me.
I love it. There's so much fun. I'll be signing up for the next one.
We've started getting real about money, but we're only just scratching the surface. Tune in to the rest of this podcast series for more insights on how those 5 powerful pillars can help us unlearn what we think we know about money. Because money is sexy, but finance is boring. Jump on to vanessastoykov.com to find me and all the resources you need to experience your own financial flashpoints, moments of realization about the changes you want to make. You can also find my latest book, The 5 Conversations About Money to Radically Change Your Life, and start applying the lessons learned by our characters to your own life today. I'm Vanessa Stoykov. Let's talk again soon.